So today on Vulnerable, I speak with Jimmy Coco, an old friend who I haven't seen and caught up with in about 15 years. He's the pioneer of mobile spray tanning. He has every single person who is a celebrity on his roster, from the Kardashians to every single Victoria's Secret model on the runway. He is extremely accomplished. He has patents in his name. He's had many, many lives, but I'm excited to talk to him about his documentary, his legacy projects, and everything else going on with him.
I'm Christy Carlson Romano, and this is the Vulnerable Podcast.
So I'm super excited to introduce you to my husband, Jimmy.
I am super excited.
Hello.
Hello.
It's good to meet you. I've heard stories. I see the success.
What have you heard? Because I have mentioned him several times before.
I mean, that he's killing it.
Yeah. Basically. I was like, I always have bragged about you, and I haven't seen you in many, many years, but I've always loved you from afar and appreciated how great you are. And so we met through our friend Jody Marr.
Jody Marr. Back, oh my goodness.
Back in the day,
yes.
I was doing more musical stuff. And yeah. Jody is, I mean, how many Grammys has she won? She's a songwriter.
She's absolutely amazing. She is such a talent. I was writing songs with her. My twin brother and I, we were doing music way back in the day.
There's a song that you have.
There was a song called Rock the Tan.
I remember that.
I know. And my brother and I, we were working with her.
Uh-huh.
And
did she write the Jimmy Coco song?
No. Well, actually, I wrote that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember it.
I wrote that. I know.
Remember it. It was cheeky.
That is very cheeky.
You
very
sing it
funny.
Right now. Jimmy Coco. I remember it.
And Jody she could pick up a guitar or sit at the piano and magic would happen.
Yeah, really.
And it would happen really quickly. And if we would be in a writing session, and there would be another writing session going on, and they needed help from Jody, like that, Jody could just do the bridge or finish the song.
Yeah,
or
she kind of like hops on and helps a lot of people. And everybody knows this woman, Jody Marr.
Yeah.
And I need to look up all of the people that she's written for, but I mean, we're talking like...
Oh my goodness, Alejandra Guzman, which
she does Spanish, a lot of really huge Spanish singers.
Yeah, so the song Dave or Dodd that she wrote, which was actually, I heard the song as a country song that she pitched that was titled Real. Mm. So the funny thing about this is that when we, way back in the day, way before I became Jimmy Coco even, and we were doing music, we would go into a convenience store and we would get snacks for writing sessions and recording and stuff because that's what my brother and I were doing at the time. And so Jody would always come up with her title there in the convenience store. We would be buying all the things that you would need to get through a session. Like, was Red Bull a thing back then? Maybe.
Yeah.
It was whatever it was. Energy drinks, Diet Coke, whatever it was. Candy, donuts, chips, just all
stuff
the junk.
To keep your energy going, yeah.
Yes. And so she bought milk, Real Milk, and Real was the title for that. And so that became the title of that song, Dave or Dodd, which was Alejandra Guzman's comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up tanning Alejandra for the Grammys, and she won the Grammy that year. And it was really exciting.
Wait, okay, so let's go back to the start. So Vulnerable is a podcast that's going to talk about sort of like the genesis of who you have become and like how you got to that place, essentially.
Right.
And so I know when I met you, but I really didn't know a lot about you. And I just enjoyed you and I knew you through the years and I've followed your work and been a fan of yours. But like, talk to me. So I didn't even know you were a twin.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And you're originally from?
Sacramento, born in Washington State, but from Sacramento.
Okay. And so you and your identical twin brother.
Yes.
What was that like? You grew up in NorCal, very different than SoCal.
Very different than SoCal.
Right.
I don't recommend it.
0 stars. <No.
laughs> I think that if you are the cookie cutter person for, you know, getting married and having children and all of that, then you'll do very well where I grew up. But that just wasn't who I was. It wasn't who my brother was.
And
so we had a difficult time growing up there. But I believe that it molded us into who we are today.
So were you and your brother very similar?
We are very similar. My brother's a little more, I would say, maybe a little more focused than I am.
Okay.
He decided to go back to school.
Okay.
And become a doctor of physical therapy.
Oh, Okay.
I'm so proud of him.
That's awesome.
Yes, so proud of him. I think, but in the end, it's interesting because we both do house calls. So he's
yeah,
doing...
He does house calls with Tanning.
yeah, I'm doing house calls for Tanning, and my brother does house calls for at assisted living facilities, adjusting walkers and canes and wheelchairs and keeping people...
Yes, my mom just fell.
Oh,
my mom just fell.
Okay.
What your brother does is extremely vital and important.
Yes.
The elderly community doesn't have a lot of support when you think about how accessible support should be. I mean, literally, we can get somebody on an Uber app to get you anything you possibly want. But a person who's likely to fall down and potentially pass out or it'd be very, very ill, I mean, and is at risk, like can't even find somebody to pick them up to go to doctor's appointments. Like I've recently been going through this with my mom. She fell twice in the last year and a half. And so, you know, when we found somebody, because I moved her down to Austin, Texas, which is where me and Brennan now live, it's like, wow, there's a capable person that I can make sure my mom is getting care from. And so it's a very important
job. And people who get into these areas of healthcare, they really do care.
Yeah.
They
absolutely do care. My brother is such a caring person and I hear him. So I'll go to a client and, you know, his house calls are during the day and mine are generally at night. And, you know, he'll call me after patients that he saw and he'll explain to me like, this is what happened or that's what happened. And that, you know, someone had fallen or someone, you know, even worse, he found them in distress and then they passed away.
Yeah.
So yeah. And they're
like real issues.
Yes.
Impactfully. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm talking to him about a spray tan that I'm going to correct, perhaps maybe that was applied by someone else. And these people are about ready to lose their shit. And I'm like, okay, so we've got someone about ready to keel over on this side because of, you know, whatever.
And then someone just
and
having
then a someone,
fit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like a big perspective change.
So how did two twin brothers from NorCal end up writing music together? Like, how did you guys end up in that? Like where did that take place? Was that here in LA?
So what happened was we were gymnasts.
Okay.
And we competed gymnastics and we were pretty good. And we would win, you know, some gymnastics meets and stuff. And then it would be in the newspaper. And then we were sought after by modeling agents. And then we were on some talk shows. And it just, we had been in junior choir through church. And we were in jazz choir in junior high school, and we were always about that entertainment. We were like little hams. We were gymnasts, and we liked to do synchronized gymnastics passes in the backyard, and we wanted everyone who could to watch us.
Yeah. Right.
So we just, that was our lives.
So you naturally were entertainers.
We were naturally entertainers, right. Yeah. So my brother and I then started going on these talk shows for twins. And there were, you know, really fun topics of like, you know, sexy twins. And then we would win a contest. And it was just, it was fun.
That's awesome. And then what did your parents?
Yeah, how did the music thing stop?
Like, so the music thing started when a friend of ours was like, hey, can you guys sing? Because you'd be a really great duo. And we're like, well.
In Sacramento?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
So then we.
So you were like local celebrities.
We kind of were without realizing it, you know, because. Living in Sacramento, for all of our successes, we were hated by our peers, right?
So
it was hard for them.
Well, were you guys, shine. They want to steal it.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you guys feel sort of like different than them in general?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, and through our gymnastics, we had mentors.
Okay.
And one of my mentors named Keb Byers, and his parents owned the gym. And I always knew from him that life outside of Sacramento could be so much better.
Okay.
Right.
And that there was hope. And, you know, you had, I think, higher educated people and more open-minded people. And I learned that. And I learned that to be true. And it was true. And I think
so it was
God
like a safe
him.
Place for you. You did the gym. Yeah. Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Being a gymnast. And those were my people.
Yeah.
And that was the safe place.
Got it.
You know, home wasn't super safe.
Yeah.
School wasn't super safe. But that was my safe place.
Yeah.
But yeah, so my brother and I, we did we were singing, and then pretty soon we were in New York and we were doing some demos and stuff. But
and your parents, were they like into that for you? Were they like, well, the boys are going to do what they're going to do? Or how were they?
I don't really remember them being into it or not. We just turned 18 and we were like, bye.
Yeah. We're out of here. Hey, we're in fucking New York.
Yeah,
bye.
There's like, crazier bye. Stuff you could have been doing. I'm sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we just grabbed the bull by the horns and we tried whatever we could.
Yeah.
And, you know, some things we would succeed at and some things we didn't, but it was okay.
Yeah, because you had each other, right?
We had each other. And it was interesting, too, because there's the... a good thing, a good side to that. And then there's also the bad side to that. I was fine always socially with my brother by my side.
Right.
But without my brother by my side, I didn't know what to do, how to stand, what to say, who to talk to. It was really scary. So then I became like, oh, who am I?
Right.
Who am I if I can't, you know, figure out how to introduce myself in a room of people?
Right.
Are you identical twins?
Identical.
Right. And there's a lot that's shared, like, that can't even be explained. Right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, there's two things that make identical twins different. Your fingerprint and life experience. So our fingerprints are different, and I had my appendix out. Mm. So that's what makes us different.
Ah.
Right.
However, if I had children, or my brother had children, we would share the same DNA. So those children wouldn't be necessarily only our nephew or niece, they would also be our half-sibling.
Our oh, half-sibling. My goodness.
Our stepchild.
Yes.
That's so wild. Or, I've never really thought
about
that.
Or like our half, what would you call that?
A half-child.
Yeah, like yeah. They would share my DNA, so yeah. I would actually be like the father also.
You could also organ donate to them or yes. something, right? Yes. Like, well, be more likely to at least.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Did I just say sibling? So I find that really interesting too, because just the whole thing behind it, like my mother was not taking fertility medication and my dad, you know, they were just like,
did they come from twins?
Happily married. No, okay. There were no other twins in the family.
Okay. Hmm. So you guys were just kind of meant to be.
So we were just, yeah, we were just sort of.
So
like
you were in New York for a bit and you were doing the whole thing. What ended you up in the, eventually what ended you guys up in, I guess, meeting Jody, working with Jody? And then did tanning come into a place with that? Were you tanning for yourself?
So I was in, I moved to Miami.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. So I met someone and you know that first person that ever says, I love you?
Yeah.
Right. And you really believe that?
Right. Yeah.
And you want that for yourself?
Yeah.
So I went to Miami for that.
Uh-huh.
And it was amazing. And, you know, although it didn't work out, I met Jody and I met so many wonderful people. Mm-hmm. And I started, I had a really wonderful modeling career through a lot of the sportswear magazines in Miami, which was great. So I was sort of recognizable and that was kind of fun. And earning money, it was
And
great.
You were away from your brother?
So I was away from my brother for a minute and then he moved down to Miami and joined me.
Fun.
And then we started doing some modeling together, which was great.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of like one of those things, you wake up and you're like, wow, Miami was a really great place to visit.
You're getting caught in a vortex
of crazy.
I think I want
to go home now.
Right, yes. Right, sure.
Yeah.
And where was home? New York or LA? Or
home
what?
Was Sacramento.
Oh, sorry, right. Sacramento.
But
you didn't want to go home.
Yeah.
So LA. I
was like, yeah, so it was tough because it was like, was I going to go to New York?
Right.
Because I was familiar with New York.
Yeah, that's
or
tough
was
living
like,
there.
Yes. And I was just a little afraid of New York. But I was really afraid of LA too, but I knew that Sacramento was out of the question.
Yeah.
Right.
I just was not happy. So we ended up moving to LA.
We, you and your brother.
My brother and I, we moved to LA together.
Okay.
And
still performing, still trying to sing or?
Yes, we were still trying to do that. We learned very quickly that we were not cut out for the industry that presented itself at the time.
Got it.
So we were like, ooh. We can't. We just were not. So we're like, okay. So we did actually sing on a world tour with Chippendales, which was great.
That's fun.
And so we were able to get that out of our system, like that whole tour thing. We're like, okay, we did that.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah. And it was fun and it was a lot of work. And then it was time to sort of settle down and think about like, okay, so what are we going to do now? We've done all of this entertainment stuff and we really enjoyed ourselves.
Wow.
Yeah. And now what?
Yeah.
Now what do we do?
How old are you at this point?
Like, I don't know, maybe 32-ish.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
So it was great. I mean, I don't have any regrets. I love that everything that I set out to do, I got to do.
Yes.
And I got to get at least to somewhat the top of that, you know, and say, wow, I did that.
Yeah.
You know.
How did the tanning thing start?
Yeah.
So tanning for me, it was always sort of that lowest common denominator. If I was modeling the sportswear that I was modeling, I had to be tan, right?
Yeah.
And I have a Port Weinstein birthmark on my chest. So I was always trying to blend that. And learning about how they covered it up, sitting in a makeup chair, you know, they were putting green over the red, and then they were neutralizing it, and then they were kind of matching my skin tone. And always trying to match the red from the sunburn that I would show up with.
Yeah, because you kind of have skin like my husband's. You guys have that pink undertone.
Yes.
What's your background?
So that's interesting because I did Ancestry DNA.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, I'm not German. I'm Dutch.
Dutch, okay.
Yes.
All right.
So I'm like, all right, where are my clogs?
Well, they have those Crocs. Those Crocs kind of look
those
like
Crocs.
Clogs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. I can't see you sporting Crocs.
So they were doing that and you started to say, well, this is interesting. Like, I think I could do this.
Yeah, so I took a bartending job in LA, which I enjoyed. And my brother was talking about going back to school to become a physical therapist.
There you go.
And I was like, oh gosh, can I go back to school?
Yeah.
And I just did not know if that's what I wanted to do.
Right.
So I continued with the modeling and the bartending. And I knew that I always did have sort of a drive for the beauty industry. I just wasn't really sure how serious that was.
Right.
And then I learned of spray tanning. And I thought, I'll start a mobile tanning business because I didn't think that I would open a salon or be, you know, pinned down to one place.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know about you, but I cannot be like in one place for too long. Like a 9-to-5 job in an office somewhere, it just was not my thing.
But wait, mobile spray tanning was still pretty new. The technology of spray tanning was also pretty new.
Right.
Somewhat. Like, I don't know if it had been around for too long, right?
It wasn't around very long at all. And mobile tanning had never been done before. So I had stumbled upon an idea.
Right.
And then I executed and I became the first person to ever do it, the pioneer, which influenced, I don't know how many thousands of spray tanners now.
I would say more than thousands.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So kind of cool. And
very cool.
It allowed me that, I mean, honestly, it was interesting because I became really well known very quickly, which I wasn't ready for. But I just remember thinking, wow, this is what they mean. Like, LA can make your dreams come true.
Right.
A great idea.
Who really put you on the map? Like, who'd you say the person was?
I know who.
You?
Who?
Posh Spice.
Oh, no.
That's how you were pitched to me originally. Jody was like, yeah, he does Posh Spice.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did. But before that,
I'm dating myself, by the way, by saying Posh Spice.
Oh my gosh. So I have to say that I was already working with, way back in the day, mm-hmm. I was working with Jennifer Garner and Jenny McCarthy and Laura Flynn Boyle.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
Laura was amazing.
Twin Peaks.
Yeah. I met Laura at a pool party and my friend was like, hey, you got to be my friend, Jimmy. He's a celebrity tanner. And I'm like, what? I had no idea what he was talking about.
You're like, this is my life now?
This is it? What? Yeah. I thought he was kidding. And then it all came true.
Wow.
But then it all came around when the Desperate Housewives came along.
Okay.
And then I started tanning them.
On set and whatnot?
Yes.
Like pretty consistently, because they always look flawless. And
yes, that was what really did it.
Yeah. And by the way, your method of spray tanning is I feel like mastery. So yes, you can do many, many things, but like, this is something that I've seen you actually do to my body, and he can literally make you have abs where there are none. Like, he can literally make your body. He just taught me a couple times when you sprayed me, he's taught me, a lot about like body image and like, it was really interesting to hear you talk sometimes about stuff, and it stuck with me because when we met, Jody Marr introduced us, I had very different like black straight hair. I was struggling with my body image. I was not healthy, smoking a ton and drinking. And like, I remember Jimmy just being so sweet and just like, almost like, honestly, very magical energy, right? Like you're just like very sweet and like ethereal and you're like, hey, I'm here to like make you feel good about your body. And like, you want abs? I'll give you abs. You want a little butt lift or whatever? Like,
no, I'm just, like, are you ready?
I bet. Yeah. You're like, ready? Oh man, it was a while ago.
Do something long enough, right?
Right. But
I'm glad I was so sweet.
You are, but you still are that person. And it's amazing how we all grow into LA is not a friendly place. And
no.
Yeah. So it's like over time, it can take the things that you love and it can really either discourage you or it can make it very corporate.
Yes.
And that's okay. Like in some ways it's okay as long as you keep that part of you that still loves what you do. So I do find that that's a challenge. Like I'm even struggling with like, do I want to continue to act right now or do I want to just kind of stay in the sponsored, you know, sort of content world. It's like easier to do some things like that, you know?
Right. LA is where all of my dreams came true. Dreams that I didn't even know that I could dream. Dreams that I didn't ask for and dreams that I couldn't ask for. And they all sort of came true. And I'm very grateful for that. But also on the other side of that, we can't forget LA has one of the highest crime rates, right? Yep.
Yes.
And it's very dangerous living in LA.
Yeah.
We know that even today.
And more so even today.
More so today. Yeah. And Sunergize, my documentary, came from a very sensitive time for me after someone super close to me passed away suddenly. And I was really scared because I thought, if this person can pass away so fast, we're all vulnerable.
Yes.
And then 2 years later, someone else extremely close to me would die. Mm. And it was really, really sad. And so in that mind frame of, okay, Jimmy, what is it if your time was to come tomorrow? Sure. What would you want to be remembered for? And that was a really, really, really tough question because you think, I would love to be remembered for this award or for that client or for this contour that I did on this person or this, you know, TV show that I did. But really, I didn't want to be remembered for any celebrity or anything like that. I wanted to be remembered for my visionary, my creative mind. And I had a project that I've always wanted to do. And this was my opportunity to do that. So Sunergize came from a place of sadness, actually. Mm. And it's kind of interesting to think about when I was struggling through losing two people that were so close to me and realizing that I was going through a time of sadness, and I turned my attention to a region of sadness to go and do my legacy project, is what I call it, which is Sunergize.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. So I didn't realize that I should have tried to get more, like, you know, attention or help for myself during that time, but through the project and trying to raise awareness to the region, that would help me anyway.
Can you explain a little bit about what it's about?
So I had a friend who was a photographer. Her name was Marie Elter. Mm-hmm. And she was, she and her son were doing photos out at the Salton Sea. And I was just like, where is this place, the Salton Sea? And she says, oh, my son, Frank Tabering, he's done some documentaries on the Salton Sea and you should watch this. So right when I saw that documentary, I forget the name of it, and forgive me for forgetting the name of it. And I am so sorry,
Frank
and Marie. But I watched the Salton Sea, and I knew instantly that's where I want to do Sunergize. Mm. I want to Sunergize at the Salton Sea.
So what is the Salton Sea?
So the Salton Sea, it's out in the Coachella Valley. Mm-hmm. The Salton Sea is California's largest body of water and yet our biggest environmental disaster. So in the early 1900s, the Colorado River had a canal burst. So the Colorado River, the canals would disperse or...
like empty out.
Yes, into different regions, mm-hmm. agricultural regions, like Vegas and different areas of Southern California.
That need it. Because of drought, yeah.
Right. And the canal, there was a canal burst which spilled all these tons of water into the Salton Sink of the Coachella Valley. And it filled up and filled up and filled up and filled up. And it became this amazing, wonderful Salton Sea.
Clean water.
Yeah, very source. Clean water. Yeah. Because at the rate of the flow of the water going into that area, the evaporation, everything just worked perfectly. So soon people were building houses. They were fishing for tilapia. 400 different species of birds were migrating and feeding off the fish during their migration process. Wow. And it became like a real
oasis.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. And then they decided to reroute the water back to its intended origins, which then what happened was the water was not coming in, but it was still evaporating out. So then the salt content of the water was becoming too toxic for the fish to survive. The birds that were migrating could no longer
feed
there. Mm. So we were losing birds and fish. And then the smell, and as it evaporated, the toxic dust that was left behind from the bottom of the sea. And so the region has just become like a toxic wasteland. So people don't talk about it too much, but we do have the Coachella festivals, and it's all right there.
Right.
And it's like no one's really doing anything to help.
It's a weird area over there.
Yes.
My husband will talk about the Indio Valley and how, you know, he's a former Marine, and you don't love the desert.
Well, I mean, the reason I don't love the desert is probably very different than why other people wouldn't love the desert.
He doesn't even like, it just triggers him.
No, it's just the drama.
But he,
no,
but it's not really true. His grandma lives down there. And
I can't even go see her.
And he's like, we just can't
just
come back
can't
down
go
here.
To the desert.
And I'm like, but come on, let's go to Chukachella.
No, I just don't go to the desert.
He's like, no.
But
you even believe so far, okay, in just kind of parsing out the story of all this, and you think that there's actually like, isn't it mentioned like Joshua tree is
being the gates
like,
to heaven and hell both have Joshua trees.
I mean, if we're talking about spirituality somewhat.
I'm not you know.
But what he's talking about when you watch this documentary, it's so interesting. There's ruins that people have left their homes and droves. It's an abandoned town that looks like a ghost town. And now there's like, it's like very ruined because of the salt.
Yes.
It looks like there's just like, it's a like a horror movie or something down there.
Absolutely. So I went to Bombay Beach, which was a popular beach.
Destination.
Back in the day.
Yeah,
in the
1950s,
celebrities were building houses there, and it was an oasis. And so I went, and I thought, this is where I want to do my spray tan using solar power. So it would be the world's first mobile spray tan using the sun's energy, turning the sun green with envy. And so I did it.
Yeah,
I did it. I called my friend Allie Ryan, who is a singer, and I said, hey, do you want to go and do this project with me? And she said, I would love to. I asked Marie and Frank Tabering of Open Valve Studios. I said, hey, guys, what do you think about this project?
Yeah,
let's do this. I want to I've always wanted to do this project, and I'm so inspired by your work at the Salton Sea. Let's go and do this a spray tan there.
So you've created so much like joy, and like you were always you networked quite a lot, but it was very authentic. Like when I met you, it always felt like you're this larger than life person, but like you loved what you did, and at the same time you loved people.
Mm-hmm.
And for better and for worse, I feel
too
like you
much.
Could take care of yourself, but and I'm sure, and that's we should definitely get into that too in some respect.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where, you know, you put so much joy in people's hearts, but now you're finally asking people to help you do something important, your legacy project.
Mm-hmm.
What did that feel like when people were jumping to help you? Was that really nice feeling? Or
it was a really wonderful feeling because I was like, hey guys, what do you say? We just go, we have some fun and we do this. And everyone jumped on board.
Yeah.
And when I first saw it, when I saw the finished project for the first time, I cried.
It's a beautifully done.
I cried.
Yeah.
Frank Tabering is one of the most talented filmmakers I think that I've ever met.
What else has he been doing?
He does many documentaries. I know that recently they moved back to Switzerland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So COVID was rough. I think he was doing some makeup tutorial videos.
Hey, man, you got to pay the bills.
Yeah. He was doing
I'll do
what
a makeup
could.
Tutorial.
Right.
Now and then.
So he. I believe, I mean, I think that he could be, you know, an award-winning, you know, director. And
but again, LA is just not.
It is hard.
How did COVID affect your business?
Yeah, so suddenly, I mean, I was on a trip. I was on a trip working for a client, and we were in Turks and Caicos. I was kind of like, what is going on with all these masks? And I had traveled to Japan before, so I know people wear masks if they're not feeling well, and they're very respectful of other people because they wear a mask if they know they're not well or if they just feel like they're not. And I loved that about the Japanese culture. They were very kind to each other. So, but I just wasn't used to it here. Mm. And so it was really kind of a little scary. I'm like, what is going on here?
Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly COVID, it just started getting, you know, bigger and bigger and bigger. And we just didn't know. Suddenly we weren't working. There was no work. And it was very, very, very scary.
Yeah.
Yes, very scary. In fact, by the time I did start working again, I think I cried when I saw my clients because we didn't know if we would ever see each other again. I mean, I'm very sensitive that way anyways. I love people. And I was just like really nervous, like what is happening here? And then we kind of figured out, well, I guess now we have a new, I mean, I had a COVID test sent to me yesterday before today. So yeah. It's just now we've got it down and we know what to do and we're doing the best. And
yeah,
I'm glad that I recently just got over COVID. And when I got COVID, when it tested positive, two things came to my mind.
This was your first time getting COVID.
My first time ever getting
COVID. After all that time,
I was like, I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
Nope.
I'm not going to get COVID.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah. I'm going to be the one that doesn't get it. Well, I got it. And the sad part to that was that it was my sister's birthday. And I have not spent my sister's birthday with her in over 30 years, probably.
Oh my God.
So, and since I was with my brother a couple of days before, that meant that he couldn't have dinner with her either. So our whole birthday party plan for her, taking her for dinner, was completely just blown. Oh. And we were so sad, so sad. So I was really sad.
You felt guilty. Like you felt like it had something to do with you.
Yes, I felt guilty. Like I didn't take enough care of myself to ensure that I would be in a safe space before so I could make it to my sister's birthday. But I just never thought that I would get it. I was always careful.
We know that.
Yeah.
I hope as a collective consciousness, people know that you can get it in ways, even if you're taking every precaution
randomly
possible.
Get it.
Oh, plus I'm working on TV productions where, we sign paperwork that we're going to be very careful.
Tested. Yeah.
Tested. Mm-hmm. And we are tested regularly.
Yeah.
And so many times that we've signed up for a shoot or something and it was canceled. We know it was because someone got COVID. It was never because I caught COVID because my tests were always negative.
Yeah.
But the fear of being the reason.
Oh, I'm
for
sure.
A big production to be shut down was a real fear for me. And that kept me locked up in my apartment, masked up and very careful.
With the cats with and the treats.
Which is also, by the way, not great for mental health.
Oh, yeah. That was tough.
You got to be around people. That's the tough part about this thing.
It was hard because I remember calling people on FaceTime. And isn't it interesting how FaceTime became such a real way of communicating? It wasn't just like this thing. Oh, my God, look.
Look
what my phone can do.
Yeah.
We really relied on FaceTime as a means to stay connected with family and friends that we could not see.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, my friend Angela, she's so funny and I love her so much and she's so busy. She was in a bubble bath and she answered me and I was like, oh, darling, how are you, darling? And I just love her, Angela Levine. She's a makeup artist and I just absolutely adore her. And I thought to myself, wow, she really cares about me to know that I could be vulnerable in that moment and need to see her face or talk to her.
That's great. That is one of the benefits of that technology, for sure. And my parents were, they were 9 minutes from where we lived. We live in Austin now. Mm-hmm. We were living in Orange County at the time, and we didn't see them for 5 or 6 months.
Yeah, our girls are young, right? So the grandma, we lived in Orange County after living here for many years. Mm-hmm. We lived in West Hollywood and everything, and then we moved to Orange County to be close to them. Mm-hmm. And so for a while it was helpful to have them there, but they definitely had to take their space just like you. Like we had to lock it up. And
she built a chicken coop on her birthday.
I built a chicken COVID. Coop.
Oh my goodness.
We got chickens and eggs.
I was a horse girl on my 35th, 6th birthday, whatever.
That's one of them. Amazing.
Yeah. So anyway.
My nephew was born. So when I was 2 years old, my dad was killed in a car accident.
Oh, my goodness. Goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I grew up without a father. I had a stepdad.
Okay.
And but I never really had a father figure.
Do you have pictures? Do you know what was your original dad like?
So I don't know much about my father because I was so young, and I know that I mean
your mom doesn't really
it was a situation where I guess my dad was out and he called his best friend to pick him up because he had been drinking, and so his best friend came to pick him up and picked him up, and then on the way home they lost the line along the road, and the car wheel apparently went off into the ditch on the side, or so they thought.
The car wheel came off of the car.
So they're driving, and they're driving slow, and how if you fall off the edge of the road, and so they were kind of caught. Yeah, it kind of like, so the car was kind of sitting like on the edge, right?
Oh.
It was actually my uncle that was driving the car. So he was like, stay in the car. Let me check to see what's on the other side, because there were some, you know, pretty far, you know, steep.
And your dad had been drinking. So he's like, let me handle it.
Yeah, let me handle it.
Okay.
So my dad, wanting to help out with the situation, opened the door, and that's when the car slid down and went over down the embankment. Wow. Yeah. So that's what happened. And my brother, my older brother at 51 years old, had a baby finally and had a boy. And so we were so excited that we were having a boy. And it would be Charles III, because my dad was actually Charles IV, because my grandpa Charles, and then my dad was Charles, and then my brother Chuck is Charles. And then now we have Charlie.
Mm.
Yeah. And so he's about a year and 3 months now. But it was really hard because we would schedule, I'd buy a plane ticket or plan on driving to see the baby, and then the numbers would surge, and my brother works in the hospital.
Your older brother is a nurse practitioner, correct?
My older brother is a trauma nurse.
Trauma nurse. And oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What it's must been like.
I believe he's a trauma
him.
Nurse. So we were thrilled to have a baby boy coming into the family after so long. And it was at the same time heartbreaking that he was being born in the midst of COVID, mm-hmm. and that we couldn't see him. And it was really a difficult time for me because I needed that. Like when my brother told me that they were going to have a baby, I'll never forget what happened to my heart. Would bloop. It just was like this feeling that I had. And I was so excited. Because there
well,
was
you had lost people that were close to you only a couple years before.
Yes. But my nephew, he's like the apple of all of our eye. We are just so in love with him. And we have this group chat that is just every day we get videos and photos. And he's just getting into everything. He's pulling all the socks out of the drawers. He's
they
so
have one,
cute.
They have just one, right?
They had just one.
Yeah.
And a pair. And at so she, so he's was 50. Or 51, and then she is like 40. Mm-hmm. So, you know, obviously
they're surprised.
They're surprised that they,
right.
They knew that they suddenly they're like, oh my gosh, we need to have a kid. We need to have a kid.
Yeah.
And then when I found out that they were pregnant, and then the baby was actually, and then we knew it was going to be a boy, mm-hmm. I was so thrilled for my brother Chuck because he was 5 years old.
So he knew
when my dad died.
Passed, yeah.
Yes. So he knew very well that daddy had passed away. And so I was so happy, and I was waiting for him because I felt like it took him a while to catch on to just falling in love with the baby.
You know what I mean? He probably had a lot to work through too, emotionally.
And
well, plus at that age, you've lived so much life and you know your routine and your life, and something so new is jarring.
Yeah.
And he is absolutely, I can't even
And he's
tell
up
you.
In Sacramento?
Yes.
Okay, so he's still up there. Is your mom, and is your mom still with
My
us?
My mom is still there.
Okay, so she gets to be a grandma, however old she is.
She is, and she is like a proud grandmother.
That's amazing.
And we all just went up for Charlie's first birthday.
Oh, see, so you did just recently get to see him.
Got to see him. Okay. October. He was born October 30th, right before Halloween. We are so excited that he is going to have the best birthday parties because it's going to be like a pre-Halloween.
And he's having a killer tan. Oh, and most importantly.
Yes. So I'm so excited and I'm just so proud of them and they're amazing parents.
Yeah.
And we've all had to be incredibly patient through COVID. And just, you know, when you see your nephew for the first time and you're like, oh my gosh. And you know, you think for a second that you see yourself.
Yeah.
And the baby.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but you're trying to find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Absolutely. And especially when it's like you're, it's, well, did you want kids?
I never really thought that I wanted them or I didn't. It just was never the natural thing that would take place.
Right.
You know, given the circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I knew very early on that, you know, I wasn't going to be, you know, the groom someday walking the aisle, having, you know, a wife and children.
I
knew that wasn't going to be
like the traditional way of a family.
But my brother now is like, hey, we need cousins. We need cousins. And I'm like, really? Really?
I think you'd be an amazing father.
I would love to become a dad.
I think you'd be an amazing
absolutely
father.
Love to
so
become
now
a
you're,
dad.
You're like, yeah, I think I'm about it.
Yeah, I would love to. I mean, I wish I could snap my fingers. But that's just not the
talk
way
talk about
works.
A legacy project.
Snap your fingers until the time like nine. That's what you really want. It's like, all right, we've worked through all that other stuff.
Your birth control might be being an amazing uncle.
Oh, my goodness. And I know I could be an amazing uncle.
Yes.
I know that I can do that.
That's amazing.
But it would be nice. See, before when Jimmy Coco came along, I was really proud to have a name that I was proud of.
Oh, yeah.
So my birth name, I was like, you know, I was ready to discard my birth name because I wasn't proud of.
What is your birth name?
Snyder.
Oh, my God. I love that name.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't. Snyder. Jesus.
I guess, but I know. I love that name, too. No, I love Jimmy Coco.
So
are you kidding
I
me?
Do now because my nephew's last name is Snyder.
Oh.
So I've embraced it. So I've created, I don't even think my brother knows this. I've created an email address now with my full name.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm so proud of that.
It's amazing.
Cool.
Yeah.
So Jimmy Snyder, that's your name?
Yes.
So that's my biological father's best friend, Jimmy Snyder.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Best friend.
Yeah. So my twin brother is Tim. So it was Jimmy and Timmy Snyder.
Yeah.
Which we thought was German until I did my ancestry DNA. I did my ancestry DNA. This is funny. I thought, I wonder if possibly my dad wasn't my dad.
Because
you hear all these stories.
You want to ask that question because you never really knew him.
That's right. So I'm like, I wonder if I have a father that's actually still alive.
And you could trace him.
Yes, and I could trace him.
Yeah.
So it was after learning that a very close friend of mine learned that her father was not her father.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, I wonder. And so I called my brother. I was like, what do you think the chances are that our dad could still be alive? He was like, he died. I'm like, but what if that wasn't our dad?
But
what if he wasn't our biological father?
What's your relationship like with your brother? After you guys lived so many lives together in so many different cities and doing so many different things, what is it like now?
Especially with your success.
Your independent success.
Yeah, we're...
Does he miss it? Does he like come and visit you and are like, oh, this is still the fun, fancy life?
He hates LA.
Okay.
So I visit him. My brother lives in Laguna Niguel.
Oh, great.
And so I'm the one needing the break from LA.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. LA, we can go back to LA is a really rough place.
Yeah.
It's a very difficult place.
So you don't even want to be here, Jimmy. You can come back to Austin with us. God.
I would love to.
Look, this podcast is set up here because this is where people are. But if we had it our way, it'd be in Austin.
It would be in Austin. And I would have flown to Austin to do this just in case. You were wondering.
Good to know.
I hear Austin's a great place to live.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is. It is a very
and
peaceful place.
And there's a wonderful
place.
Community there.
Incredible. Yeah. People are incredible.
Yeah. Wow.
They're so kind.
Yeah.
They'll open up their Rolodexes and their hearts to you with no expectation.
You would love it and fit in perfectly.
Yes. So yeah, I go visit my brother to get away. And whereas I once hated returning home to Sacramento, now my nephew is there and the extended family. And I love that we have my nephew has an auntie Lena who is
his
my nephew's mother's sister.
Yeah.
So Lena lives down here.
Oh, Oh, fun.
So I hang out with Auntie Lena.
That's awesome. That's cool.
Yeah, so it's really interesting how we have that family connection through my nephew.
That's great.
So what I find really interesting about your story so far, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I want to jump back into talking about like the documentary and stuff like that. But it's like the brand, you know, for so long, and I know, remember when we first met, Jimmy Coco was who you were, like you said. And by the way, I was Christy Carlson Romano very much when I met you. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, and I was very much a different person than I am
in
now.
In the trenches of that.
And
totally,
I've gone full circle and almost had to reclaim that name because now it's safe for me to reclaim that name.
Mm-hmm.
You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? And like, you know, it's important because you know, as a branded name, to sort of embrace it in a way that can and sort of foster the creativity behind the brand so that people still buy into it.
Right.
So that it's still something that you can profit from. Otherwise, what is, you know, that is somewhat of your legacy still.
Absolutely.
But to have like a, what Brendan and I call an ironic distance from it, to like be like, okay, like that's who I am, but it's not really who I am. It's not my life experience. So like when I met you, we talked a lot about your roster because I asked.
Yeah.
But now it's like we're talking solely about not experiences in Hollywood, which you have tons and tons and tons of those, but more or less like the importance of your nephew and your family and your family name and going to Sacramento. And it's like, it really is wonderful to see that all this time has gone by, such a beautiful journey you've made. And just now you're coming back into, you know, new products, new business, new whatever. And it's like, you can still enjoy the fruits of the brand that you've created all over all this time.
Yeah. And it's like you say, coming full circle. I never thought that I would embrace my biological self.
Yeah.
The way I am now. And it's because of my brother and his wife. Well, they're not married yet. Which is even...
There you go. I got a wedding on the way.
Oh my gosh. I can't wait for that. Oh my gosh. You know, the little kids in the wedding are like the most fun part of the wedding.
Oh, for sure.
Oh my God. I can't wait to see how my nephew is like disruptive or like really great or whatever.
That's awesome. Real life stuff.
Yeah. So I'm back around to loving who I am. Like I am proud of the work that I've done. I'm proud of the brand and I'm proud of all of those things. But at the end of the day, you've got to have your family.
Yeah.
You have to have your family. Shit will always hit the fan.
Oh, yeah.
It's always going to hit the fan. And when it does, who are you going to turn to?
And you can define your family too.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Absolutely.
If you don't have family members, you can create your own found family.
Yeah.
But family is important.
The person who introduced us, Jody, was very much a big sister to me.
Yeah.
And I feel like her friends were very much her family.
Oh, and Shane Solosky.
Shane Solo.
Oh, yes. And
what's up? Shout out to Shane.
Oh, my God. Shane is amazing.
I'm still friends with him on Facebook, too. Shane, old rocker.
So my twin brother, Tim, he's still doing music. He absolutely loves the music.
Is he a musician, your brother?
He's singing.
Okay.
And he's producing through GarageBand.
Cool.
And he's like, he's really... impressed. He's doing such a good job, but he's always recording with Shane.
That's awesome. Shane, I've recorded with Shane.
Yeah, yeah.
I think
we all have, right?
Yes, yeah. Shane's great. Brendan hasn't met Shane yet.
Yeah, Shane's amazing. Oh, you've got to meet Shane.
Shane Solo.
Shane is so cool.
He is
and
very
he finally
cool.
has, and he has this amazing girlfriend.
Yeah.
They love each other so much, and you've always just wanted that for Shane.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
to have just a girlfriend that just... So he has that, and they're
Shane
happy.
Gave me this book that was this like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Heart Band. He was really big into the Beatles. And he gave me this like limited edition book that we have in like our library. I'll show it to you. But Shane's cool. He's probably in his like 50s, right? No.
Yeah. Yep.
And was he in a band? He was in a band, wasn't he? In a big band.
Yeah, the band was called Big. Yes. Okay. So he played bass for Five for Fighting?
Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The Superman song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's been part of so many wonderfully successful bands. And so he and Jody were in a band called Big.
Yes.
I believe that was
that's
the name
right.
of the
and
band.
She was the lead singer.
And she was the lead singer.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she and Shane they have just been fixtures in my life.
Yeah, they were your somewhat of your family. And I think I remember that. So that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice that you brought up Shane. I forgot about that. These are different like chapters in my life that are actually really positive. You guys were really, really sweet to me at a time where, when I look back, was a really hard time. You know what I mean? And just out of curiosity, in terms of like body image, like how do you feel like in terms of like, I know how you're so supportive of the people that are your clients, but like, what do you make of body image like with young girls, like, you know, and how it's happening? Like we've remarked upon like the people on TikTok as not really even like having a childhood anymore because it's happening younger and younger and younger now. That they look older and older and older.
Yes.
Have you seen that too? Or is that just the helicopter mom in me?
I feel like it's a shame where we've gone to with, you know, body image and all of these filters that we have on different social media platforms to change your body or to change your face. It's like, you know, where are the times of embracing who we are? So I have this Port Wine stain birthmark on my chest, but I don't cover it up every day and I'm not ashamed of it.
And you know what's funny is that as much as the body image issue with the filters is a thing, body inclusion is also there. Body image, sort of like acceptance and stuff.
You know, and Kim Kardashian with her curves and, you know, she's been able to really...
I'm sorry, have you sprayed? Are you a Kardashian sprayer?
Oh,
you are, right?
Yes. Yes.
You didn't know that? How did I know that?
And no, I knew that. I knew that. I just wanted to admit it.
Every girl with curves can look up to Kim.
Yes.
For, you know, being themselves and wearing what makes them feel beautiful and not worrying about what people might say if their, you know, butt isn't the right size for them.
You know what I find interesting, actually, like recently I've been looking at some posts, like there's this like Sakara Life and like the girl that's eating it is like really thin and like wearing like, you know, fitness stuff. And I have to train my brain not to judge her for being thin because I know it's like we've come so far as to accept body image as being fuller is better, but it's not necessarily about better. It's about healthier.
Right.
Without the falseness of healthy.
And I have 10 years of Victoria's Secret fashion shows backstage doing tanning. So I've seen all different sizes and I've seen all different types of beauty and what different perspectives people have on beauty.
They talk to you.
Has it evolved a lot since you first started?
It has absolutely evolved.
In a good way?
In a good way, yeah. I mean, you can look at a woman who's like very thin and think she's very chic, regal, beautiful, and she is. And then you can also look at a more full-figured woman or man, and they could be the same. And now they finally have a voice. Everyone has a voice.
Right.
Even trans women. I work with trans girls that are beautiful also, and... You know, it's great that we've come to a time and a place where people can be outspoken and tell their story, and you wouldn't believe the amount of people that are willing to not only listen to it, but understand them, accept them, and agree and support them.
That's part of what we want to do on this podcast.
Yeah.
Too. It's like just platform all different kinds of people with different stories.
Yes.
And I think that's probably that's one side of social media. Where we can get lost as we get into these echo chambers of thought. This, it's either this or it's that with body or this or that. It's like, I feel this is why I like podcasts so much. Mm-hmm. If you have the opportunity to really get to know somebody and hear their story, the image that you see before you would change, right? Because people have a lot of depth to them.
Right.
We live in the gray, not the black or the white.
I actually have a question about male body image too.
Okay.
Like, how have you seen male body image change in all types of male communities, heterosexual, homosexual, like in the range of that? I feel like there has been less acceptance. In fact, I feel like hetero males have more toxic masculinity issues with their body image than ever before. And then in the LGBTQ plus community, there is that acceptance still. I'm not sure about the exclusively male side of that, but like, what do you think of that? Like on the spectrum of that?
I don't think I've seen enough. I mean,
hetero males still want to look buff.
They still want
cut
abs.
And like, there's so much pressure.
There's still pressure, and there's a lot of need for the abs. I mean, they feel like if they don't have abs, then
do you have to like go to like male that are identifying as hetero? Like, do you have to spray abs on them a lot of times? You feel like
I do.
Yep.
Yeah, it's requested. Everyone wants abs. Yeah, and I'm like, you already have them. I can follow the lines that are already there, but I can enhance them, sure. So yeah. Everyone's already got them. Yeah. But it is, you are starting to see a little bit more out in the open and like on commercials and stuff. Like, the what do they call it? The dad bod?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
We've
yeah.
talked about this. Here,
and, yeah, and I feel like I'm somewhere in between. Like, but I feel that the focus on the body positive is women, because for years, if you weren't super skinny,
yeah,
you weren't fashionable or accepted.
Yeah.
And I'm really happy to see that that has changed and that the color of your skin no longer matters. And whatever was seen as a negative before, a birthmark, alopecia, freckles, is now accepted as beautiful.
Right.
And there's commercials where you see the girls with freckles and, yeah, and you're just like, oh my gosh, these.
It's what makes us so unique.
Yes. There are amazing things coming.
Okay. Let's hear it.
And if there, there will be more inventions and more.
I can't wait.
Do you own patents? First.
Yes, I do.
Amazing.
I do.
That's the
so
game.
So all I can say is watch the space.
Okay.
And know that I'm not done. And things are amazing. Life is good.
Do you want to do more documentaries?
Absolutely. I would love to do more documentaries. I would love to synergize in every region of the world that I would ever work.
So that's with what synergizing, I would love to do. But is synergizing something that's about, like, is it a, not a politicized movement, but is it about climate change? Is it about that? Like, what is it for you? What is your why on the project?
So the why on the project is to find a place or a region. So a place that I would love to synergize next would be, there's a rapid deforestation in the Northern England forest. Mm-hmm. And the trees that were cut down too fast, that's causing a problem with the ecosystem there. Mm-hmm. And for those people that aren't aware of that, I would love to synergize there to raise awareness to that and possibly raise money for the region to help out whatever insect needs to live off of that tree or that
sure.
shrub.
Well, that...
Yeah.
That's you know what I mean? Something that a lot of people don't realize.
Right.
Is that it starts, a tree goes to an insect, goes to a bird, goes to, right?
Yeah.
And it, yeah.
And when you say make the sun green with envy, it's because it's not actually doing its job in tanning the person.
Right. It's powering up the spray tan machine that's giving them a tan without any sun damage.
And also I heard on your documentary that the trees themselves, like sugarcane crops and stuff, are needed to make the chemicals that are inside of the spray too.
Right. So. Yeah. So a lot of the natural ingredients are grown under the sun.
Well, look, I'm really excited to see what you do in this documentary space. And if you ended up using that same filmmaker, they did a great job. So, you know, good luck with that.
And by the way, thank you. Just as a point of note, today I had read that they created an artificial plant which is very cost effective and is sucking in greenhouse gases. It's supposed to be incredible. And they're looking at doing it
full scale.
You know
what the name
scale.
Of it is?
I can't remember. Feel free to Google it.
I will.
I don't have my googly in front of me right now.
Yeah.
But if I did, I'd tell you. It's very, very cool. And hopefully it becomes a big thing.
Sucking in. Wow.
That
well,
would be amazing.
Yeah.
Being inventive is what we must do.
Yes.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Honestly, it was really fun catching up with you.
And so great catching up with you.
You are just as amazing and magical as you were the first time that we hung out.
And a great pivoter, most importantly.
Oh.
Most importantly. You're a great pivoter. No, honestly, you're a great pivoter. And like, that's part of the focal point of the show is no one becomes successful without failing. Right. And like, how do you live in that failure or do you pivot? How do you learn from it? And the fact that you've had all these different life experiences and now have this amazing business is just, that's what makes you so, I mean, and all your stories make you so interesting.
I guess if there would be a takeaway from this podcast and from me delivering a message, it's that during times of darkness or sadness or tragedy and loss, if you look within yourself to find your light, it could shine brighter than it ever did before. You
love
just
that.
Have to really find that.
Heck yeah.
Thank you, Jimmy.
That's a great way to close.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Vulnerable is hosted by me, Christy Carlson Romano, produced by Elizabeth Joy Windham, and executive produced by Brendan Rooney. Our sound engineer and editor is Elizabeth Joy Windham, and our video editor is Eduardo Gamba. Follow Vulnerable wherever you listen to podcasts, so you can join me every week for a Vulnerable conversation. And be sure to follow Vulnerable on Instagram and TikTok at The Vulnerable Podcast. And make sure to tune in to my YouTube to watch the video version.